Hi, Dave Emery here. This is For the Record program number 1347, Conversations with Monty. This is conversation number 21, and this is being recorded on the first day of autumn of 2024, September 22nd. And once again, it is my pleasure and my privilege to introduce my new co-host, Monty. And we have been talking about Asia, and we're going to get back to that in our next interview, but there have been some things surfacing in the presidential campaign that really underscore and amplify some of the things that have been in our recent discussions. And I think what I'm going to do, Monty, is to read a little bit and then let you further develop that. To make a very long story very short, what we're going to be talking about is the whole meme of, you know, Haitians in Springfield, Ohio, stealing people's cats and dogs and eating them, or ducks and geese, which is not only BS, but it's Nazi BS. And it's not only Nazi BS, but it's coming from a Nazi group that was training to fight with the Azov Battalion in Ukraine. And we also were treated to another alleged attempt on Trump's life by another lone nut, Ryan Wesley Routh, R-O-U-T-H, who somehow, and I'll read a short section of the post that asks some key questions, but he also was promoting and trying to recruit for the Azov Battalion, for the Ukrainian Legion. And whereas so many of these, quote, lone nuts, unquote, you know, they tend to publish a manifesto. What Ryan Wesley Routh did, he published a book that sells for $2.99, well, I shouldn't have mentioned, but it sells on Amazon. And that promotes, not only he encourages Iran to assassinate Trump, but it's fascinating to me that Trump is going on tour with Tucker Carlson, who recently had a Holocaust denier on, as we talked about. And he is going to be touring with Donald Trump, J.B. Vance, and Alex Jones of Infowars.com. And in a program of maybe 6-8 months ago, Alex Jones and his guests were openly ruminating about what a good thing it would be if Trump were assassinated, you know, by, quote, the left, unquote. I mean, if Kamala Harris and Joe Biden are the left, then, you know, I'm a UFO. I'm a space alien who just stepped off the UFO. But if, I think if I were Donald Trump, I'd be very reluctant to tour with somebody who was musing about how wonderful it would be if I got killed because it would spur a bloodletting. But that, then again, I'm not Donald Trump. This will not only amplify some of our discussion about Spaz Rakin of the OUNB, of the ABN, meeting Lee and Marina when they got back from the Soviet Union, but also some of our discussions about Roy Frankhauser and the 544 Camp Street, 531 Lafayette Place, Nexus in New Orleans, that in addition to an obvious intelligence front, was also serving as an epicenter of the far right, or domestic fascist groups, the American Nazi Party, Ku Klux Klan, the Minutemen, the National States Rights Party. And, you know, before this, Monty, speaking of 544 Camp Street, 544 Camp Street, 531 Lafayette Place, you have recently come across, before we get into the main focus of discussion, you have come across a link between Guy Bannister's spying operations down in New Orleans and the Manson phenomenon. In some of our Patreon talks, we featured a brilliant researcher who I want to get on some of these programs to share some of that with the audience. But if you would briefly fill us in the link between a Bannister investigator and the Manson milieu.
Right. Well, once again, thank you, Dave, for having me on. It's a privilege and a pleasure to be here. But as for the Manson information, that was developed by another brilliant researcher who goes by the name of
Hal Sanderson.
Yeah, Hal Sanderson. He did some brilliant work on the Manson family. And he mentioned some of Manson's connections to an organization called the Process Church of Final Judgment. And I thought that was really interesting that he brought that up, because I had just got done reading a book called The Mad Bishops. And this was published by Trine Day. And the author is James Day. And the back of the book has a blurb on him that says that he has a BA in Latin from John Carroll University and an MFA from Loyola Marymount School of Film and Television. And the subtitle of his book is The Hunt for Earl Aglin James and His Assassination Brethren. Once again, the title of that book is The Mad Bishops by James Day, The Hunt for Earl Aglin James and His Assassination Brethren. Now, just to give a quick blurb to the background of that character, Aglin James, he was a member of the old Roman Catholic Church, a bishop, and ultimately, on his spare time, the way that he made the vast bulk of his monies throughout the 1940s and 50s, he was a forger, and he was a claimant of over 2,100 honorary degrees through Catholic universities and various hierarchies of the Catholic Church that were all forged. And this was the basis for Jack Martin and David Ferry's Wandering Bishops organizations, you know, where they claimed to be representatives of the Synod, old Orthodox, Russian Orthodox version of Catholicism, okay? And for those people that know their history of the Kennedy assassination, you'll know that people like David Ferry and Jack Martin, who both acted as investigators for Guy Bannister, used the cover of these forged documents in order to allow them to essentially move about with diplomatic immunity. And for those people that don't understand, Vatican City and the Lateran Treaty that was set up in 1923 and 24 between the Vatican and the Italian fascists under Benito Mussolini, had essentially granted representatives of the Vatican with diplomatic immunity, okay? So if you had forged documents that identified yourself as a Vatican official or a representative of the church, this would allow you some amount of diplomatic immunity when, say, crossing international borders. And this is what people like David Ferry and Jack Martin used in terms of these forged documents that Earl Aglin James was producing for Guy Bannister and a few of his investigative employees.
And by the way, Peter LaVenda did some writing about that, too. He spoke about that in
right.
a three-volume series that was also published by Trine Day called Sinister Forces.
Right, right. So I realize that all this sounds a bit obtuse towards the church, but I want to make it very clear that I am not speaking out against the Vatican or the Catholic Church as organizational structures, or to any one person listener that identifies as a Catholic. You know, I'm speaking about criminals that are forging documents in order to identify themselves as Vatican employees, okay? So that's what I'm making reference to here. Now, I have to find the exact entry inside of the book here that talks about one of these employees that was working for Guy Bannister that ultimately was using these forged documents in order to conduct COINTELPRO type activities, penetrating not only leftist organizations, but far right wing organizations. And once again, for those persons that don't understand the nature of J. Edgar Hoover's counterintelligence program or COINTELPRO, it was meant to target not only leftists who had a gripe with the United States government, but far right organizations that were engaging in treasonous activities against the United States government, particularly during the Kennedy administration. COINTELPRO was tasked by Bobby Kennedy, who at the time was the Attorney General, not only of the United States, but he was also the commander of all special operations activities under Special Group Augmented, which replaced the Eisenhower era Psychological Strategy Board. Okay. So, you know, Bobby Kennedy had ordered J. Edgar Hoover to use COINTELPRO to penetrate right-wing organizations that were involved in acts of sedition against the United States government. You know, so this is a very bizarre episode in the history of the FBI where they were actually going after right-wing organizations and infiltrating them. So with that said, if I could find the reference here to Guy Bannister's activities. Let's see. And perhaps, Dave, while we're waiting here for me to get my act together and find this reference, you could turn on the listening audience to what the process Church of Final Judgment was and what it represented for Manson.
We delved into that at some length in a miscellaneous archive series called The Ultimate Evil. That is taken from a book by the late Maury Perry. And the Process Church of the Final Judgment was an occult group that appears to have, at least in part, served as a front for some really insidious activities, including Nazi activities, murder, and a number of things. We should note that one of the dynamics with regard to any group, but particularly occult groups, they can be infiltrated and used as a cover, not necessarily with the approval of the people who are running said organization. But we went into the Process Church at some length in that Ultimate Evil series, and the Son of Sam killings, the Manson murders, there was a guy named who Maury Perry called Manson II, appears to have been involved with some of what my late dear friend Mae Brussel referred to as the California violences. The Process Church, in part at least, appears to have served as a front for some really insidious activities, again, including murder. I mean, that sounds glib to just rip off the top of my head, but I went into it at great length, again, in the series The Ultimate Evil, taken from a book, again, authored by the late Maury Perry, that came out in the 1980s. So that is what that is. And oh, by the way, as we're talking about programs that I did years ago, this fall there would be a new flash drive coming out. This one is going to have to be a 64 gigabyte flash drive with all of the conversations with Monty so far, all of my life's work, plus a mini library of old anti-fascist books, and it will be available for a very nominal sum. I can't mention the amount on the air. I will say that neither myself nor Monty gets any money from this whatsoever, which perhaps could serve as proof positive that my worst critics' claims about me are accurate, and name it that I'm nuts. So that will be available if some of the very informative and yet very dense presentations that Monty has shared with us are perhaps overwhelming to some listeners, getting that flash drive will enable you to preserve those conversations and everything I've done, and I'm now in my 46th year on the air. So if you want to find out about the ultimate evil, it will be on that flash drive. Not that the flash drive is the ultimate evil, but it will be there. Anyway, so about this guy
so,
who...
So ultimately, I found a reference here. Once again, this is from the book The Mad Bishops by James Day, put out by Trine Day, and this is in chapter 6 of the book titled Whither Thou Goest. And I'll just read the entire reference in its entirety, if you don't mind, Dave.
Go ahead.
In 1951, Raymond O'Brien, last name spelled O'Brien, launched the United Christian Nationalist Party in Ireland, borrowing its objective from the Christian Nationalist Crusade, a quasi-political party from St. Louis, Missouri. In reality, the Christian Nationalist Crusade was a platform for anti-Semitic publications like the International Jew and the Protocols of the Elders of Zion.
Was that Gerald L. K. Smith's organization?
Oh, yes, absolutely. I'll get to that in a second. Reading again. Okay. The Christian Nationalist Crusade was a platform for anti-Semitic publications like the International Jew and the Protocols of the Elders of Zion, as well as a vehicle for promoting segregation. Its founder was Gerald L.K. Smith, another believer that Jesus was a Gentile. Smith, a former aide to Louisiana Senator Huey Long in the 1930s, sent an appeal letter to benefactors in the summer of 1960 that read in part, quote, and this is Gerald L.K. Smith speaking, quote, "You and I must make a choice between Kennedy and Nixon. There is no difficulty as far as I am concerned, even though Nixon might repudiate me in public for my alleged anti-Semitism. Richard Nixon is under the influence of a great Christian man, and he has a noble Christian background. He may say some things in the campaign which you and I do not agree, but if he says things to test my patience, I will say within the entirety of my soul, we dare not have Kennedy," end quote. there is no evidence, reading again, there is no evidence Smith and O'Brien actually met, which did little to deter O'Brien from his comments and beliefs. And this is O'Brien speaking now, Raymond O'Brien, quote, "To protect Ireland from the encroachment of Bolshevism, O'Brien set up a paramilitary organization called the Black Eagles, which would fight in the spirit of the Crusaders. Advertisements around Dublin in 1960 for the security arm of the United Christian Nationalist Party caught the attention of Colonel Dan Brain of the Irish Military Intelligence. It concluded that, quote, it had all the hallmarks of an orthodox fascist movement. At the same time, as R.M. Douglas noted, both failed to ignite much of a following as effective as domestic subversive groups." Now, O'Brien and James might seem like small fish, but too often historic events are defined by those ignored as public nuances before it was too late. Consider the behaviors of Charles Whitman, Timothy McVeigh, or Dylann Roof leading up to their murderous actions. Moreover, the relationship between O'Brien and James cannot be ignored due to the similar fascist ideology advocated by another ancillary network of Earl Anglin James, the New Orleans Cabal of Bishops under Guy Bannister. Viewers of the movie JFK will remember Jack Lemmon's memorable turn as the bumbling drunk Jack Martin, particularly when he is pistol whipped by his employer, Guy Bannister, who is played by Ed Asner in the film, in Bannister's New Orleans office. It was the night of the Dallas assassination. The two men who had been drinking, Martin and Bannister, insinuated that Bannister had knowledge of the shooting, meaning the Kennedy assassination. Movies are limited by their own thematic agendas. Both men were more complex than they are depicted in JFK, for all as Bavara could afford. Bannister was a Caldwell Parish native, to rule in northern Louisiana. His father was the parish's deputy sheriff, who died of an accidental drowning on Halloween night in 1940. Bannister joined the nearby Monroe Police Department before becoming an FBI special agent in 1935. By 1954, he was Chicago's FBI agent in charge, where he retired from the FBI at the age of 53. The reason for Bannister's retirement deserves further scrutiny. In a complaint directly to Director J. Edgar Hoover, Bannister wrote, quote, 20 years ago, the leadership of the FBI had divorced the field investigators, and the two have been living in adultery ever since, end quote. After that, Bannister was told by J. Edgar Hoover that he was getting transferred from Chicago to Honolulu, Hawaii, to become the FBI special agent in charge. Guy Bannister retired instead and moved back to Louisiana. Bannister became assistant superintendent for the New Orleans Police Department, the third-ranking officer on the force, in 1955. He drew the ire of officers when he conducted an internal investigation of suspected grafting and illegal lottery operations. And he drew the ire of boxing promoters for cracking down on racketeering. In March of 1956, a voodoo curse was put upon Chief Bannister, and a shoebox bomb intended for the New Orleans Police Department went off at the post office. That same month, Bannister undertook an investigation of possible communist activity in New Orleans, attempting to recruit former communist spy turned FBI star informant and converted Roman Catholic Elizabeth Bentley to assist. Bentley denied. Bannister himself is typically portrayed as the ideal anti-communist crusader, but there is another factor beyond communism that motivated those thoughts and actions of crusaders like Bannister, an issue that came much closer to home than Marxism, civil rights, and the ramifications of the Supreme Court's 1954 ruling on Brown versus the Board of Education of Topeka, Kansas, that deemed segregation of public schools unconstitutional. Speaking at a rally in northern Louisiana in 1957, State Attorney General Jack Grimlian asserted that communism is behind the integration movement, end quote. The rally was sponsored by the White Citizens Council of Claiborne Parish. Guy Bannister was deeply bonded with the Greater New Orleans chapter of the White Citizens Council of Claiborne Parish. Furthermore, Bannister testified before a Louisiana Joint Legislature Committee on Subversion of Racial Unrest. That hearing concluded that integration was an international communist-backed plot. Bannister was suspended from the New Orleans Police Department for allegedly pulling his gun on a bartender one too many times during a few fights he had during Mardi Gras in 1957. Bannister had been drinking heavily. When he was demoted from his assistant job as superintendent, Bannister refused a lower job offer to him and was duly fired in June of 1957. He became president and publisher of a weekly newspaper called the West Bank Herald, writing a short-lived column called Behind the Scenes of Guy Bannister, mostly fire and brimstone pieces on communism. The address for the investigating firm, Guy Bannister Associates Incorporated, was 434 Balter Building. Bluefer Balter, last name spelled B-A-L-T-E-R, was co-owner of the West Bank Herald. He was also one of the heads of the New Orleans American Nazi Party. Okay, I want to make that very clear again. Guy Bannister's newspaper, the West Bank Herald, was co-owned by one of the co-heads of the New Orleans American Nazi Party. Continuing. It was not uncommon for Klansmen, Minutemen, White Citizens Council members, and other fascist sympathizers coming and going out of the Balter Building, making it, quote, a center of radical right-wing activity in New Orleans between 1956 and roughly 1964. I should note that Guy Bannister died in 1964. Continuing. Jack Martin was born Edward Stewart Scuggs in Dallas at about 1906. He was a United States Navy veteran at the Battle of Pearl Harbor and loyal to the American Legion and the Veterans of Foreign Wars when out of service. I should note real quick as an editorial, Dave, for your listening audience, that the American Legion was part and parcel to the second wave of the Ku Klux Klan in the United States of America at the turn of the last century. And the reason behind that is because Thousands of members of the American Legion in the American South were recruited into the fledgling Ku Klux Klan between 1921 and 1923 through an anti-communist organization called the American Protective League, which was an offshoot of the American Legion.
And by the way, Benito Mussolini was named an honorary member of the American Legion in the early 1920s.
That's right.
That also is in a miscellaneous archive show. No, actually, that's in a For the Record program that will be available on the new 64-gigabyte flash drive, along with all of these conversations with Moppy. Again, continue, Moppy, but I do want to get to the... We're talking about the Nazi, American Nazi Party, although it was not an American Nazi Party per se link, but the whole Haitians eating people's dogs and cats and geese, that...
We'll get to that in a minute.
That explicitly has a Nazi genesis, and when the Republican nominee for president, himself a former president, is discussing this on national television, and then J.B. Vance, his vice presidential candidate, is echoing that. They are repeating Nazi propaganda, and beyond that, Nazi propaganda that dovetails with the war in Ukraine, the Azov Battalion, and that same nexus also figures in the background of the latest, quote, lone nut, unquote, to go after Trump, or at least ostensibly, Ryan Wesley Routh. Go ahead.
Right. So reading again about Jack Martin and his connections with far-right fascist organizations such as the American Nazi Party and the Process Church of the Final Judgment. Continuing, Jack Martin was born Edward Stewart Suggs in Dallas in about 1909. He was a Navy combat veteran of the Battle of Pearl Harbor and loyal to the American Legion and the Veterans of Foreign Wars when out of service. He also worked in law enforcement. In 1952, Suggs, a.k.a. Jack Martin, was connected to a murder plot to blow up the sheriff of Houston. By then, he was wanted on murder charges out of Dallas, a back alley abortion resulting in a woman's death, though that evidently was dropped. He was a slippery character, one who didn't quite know what to think of him or what he said. When Suggs went to work for Bannister, he worked under the alias Jack Steward Martin. As a bishop, Jack Martin, a Freemason who sat in the very same Freemason lodge of Carlos Marcello and Thomas Jude Balmer, another one of Bannister's investigators, Balmer, last
isn't
name spelled
Tommy, B-A-U-M-L-E-R?
B-A-U-M-L-E-R, Thomas Jude Balmer, yep. Okay?
I think that's pronounced Balmer, but I may be wrong.
Balmer. Yeah, you're correct. Balmer. Thomas Jude Balmer. Another one of Bannister's investigators who later became an attorney who oversaw the incorporation for the Process Church of Final Judgment. End
quote. Wow. I did not realize that.
So, that ultimately, one of Guy Bannister's top informants in the 1950s and 60s, and Jack Martin's deputy within Guy Bannister Associates, oversaw the Articles of Incorporation for the church that Charlie Manson was inspired to create his organization, the Process Church of Final Judgment.
Wow. So, yet another intelligence community and fascist link to the Manson milieu. And by the way, I want to give a nod to the consummately important book Chaos by Tom O'Neill. A really brilliant book. And I think I would hold Tom O'Neill up as an example of what an investigative reporter should be, because he originally was going to write an article for Details magazine, and he then embarked on a 20-year crusade investigative journalistic crusade to investigate the Manson milieu, and he wound up not only dealing with the intelligence community, Operation Chaos, the CIA's disruption of, among other institutions, the anti-Vietnam War movement, but he also eventually got to, drumroll fanfare, the Kennedy assassination, and mind control. And by the way, I wanted to mention very quickly, you were talking about Ireland. In right. another important book, albeit one that is editorially very flawed, the book Coup in Dallas by the late Hank Alborelli, there is a lot of discussion of Otto Skorzeny and the implementation of fascist networks in Ireland. And
it has to be understood. Once again, this isn't speaking out against Irish revolutionaries, and certainly not fledgling elements of the IRA, whom I don't want to piss off. But it has to be understood that during the Second World War, elements of the fledgling Irish revolutionary armies ended up working for Otto Skorzeny in Irish Waffen-SS units. And yes, there was an Irish contingency of the Waffen-SS that was specially trained by Otto Skorzeny. Okay, so
one of the things that's important for people these days to understand is that some of the most important manifestations of fascism actually took place in the period between the world wars, because many of the countries on Earth today were actually colonies of some of the European powers, such as Britain, France, the Netherlands, that wound up either being conquered by or fighting against the Third Reich. And so those are very important and enduring to this day. Present, by the way, on both sides of the horrifying conflict in the Middle East. But with that, that's a whole other story. What I want to do, unless you have more to discuss about the link between the process church and Guy Bannister.
Not at all. Let's move on from that.
We've been treated by, or treated to, I guess, it's a very liberal use of the term treat, but Donald Trump in the debate with Kamala Harris was repeating the meme that Haitian immigrants in Springfield, Ohio, have been stealing people's dogs and cats and eating them, and also ducks and geese from municipal ponds and so forth. And what I want to do is to discuss the genesis of that, because it is more than a little important for people to grasp this. And by the way, I want to apologize to the Patreon audience, because I went into this at some length in the recent Patreon talks, but this is too important to keep to those talks. Now, this I'm going to read from an article from NBC News of September 13th of 2024. This is by a woman named Brandy, last name Zabrosny, Z-A-B-R-O-Z-N-Y. I may be mispronouncing that. Again, from NBC News, the article, before Trump, neo-Nazis pushed fake claims about Haitians as part of hate campaign. And the subhead, an extremist group that marched in Springfield, Ohio, and demonized Haitian immigrants saw Trump's mention of baseless rumors at the debate as a victory. Quote, this is what real power looks like, unquote. I would suggest, I'm going to talk more about what real power looks like in a minute. And this reads, the day after the presidential debate at which former President Donald Trump spread a false story about Haitian immigrants eating pets in Springfield, Ohio, Christopher Polhaus, last name capital P-O-H-L-H-A-U-S, leader of the national neo-Nazi group Blood Tribe, took to his Telegram channel to take credit. Polhaus, a Marine-turned-tattoo artist known as, quote, Hammer, unquote, to his hundreds of followers, wrote Blood Tribe had, quote, pushed Springfield into the public consciousness, unquote. Members of his hate group agreed, quote, the president is talking about it now, a member wrote on Gab, a Twitter-like service popular with extremists, quote, this is what real power looks like, unquote. Trump's line at the debate was the culmination of a weeks-long rumor mill, but it appears to have at least been amplified by Blood Tribe, which has sought to demonize the local Haitian community online and in person. The debate drew more than 67 million viewers, according to the media analytics company Nielsen. As with most rumors, the beginning of the baseless claims about Haitians eating pets in Springfield is hard to pinpoint, but Blood Tribe undoubtedly helped spread it. Starting in late June, people in local Facebook groups had been posting about Haitian children chasing ducks and geese. Around the same time, conservative media was characterizing Springfield as being, quote, flooded, unquote, with Haitian immigrants. Over the next few weeks, the Facebook complaints, still without evidence, got darker, with anonymous posters claiming that they were hearing that ducks and geese were going missing, perhaps even being eaten by their immigrant neighbors. Continuing, the Springfield Police Department told NBC News that, quote, there have been no credible reports or specific claims of pets being harmed, injured, or abused by individuals within the immigrant community, unquote. The rumor began to grow legs in the private local groups as the blue-collar city's immigration-driven population growth became national news in an election year. Blood Tribe latched on last month when it started posting to Telegram and Gab about Springfield stoking racist rumors about Haitians and black people in general eating domestic animals. In a hate-filled Gab post from early September that included multiple racial epithets, the group claimed Haitians, quote, eat the ducks out of the city parks, unquote. The reach of Blood Tribes isn't clear, as its Gab and Telegram accounts have fewer than 1,000 followers. In response to a request for comments sent to Poll House, Blood Tribe said in an email that it stood by its claims and that it would continue its activism, quote, making sure, unquote, Haitian immigrants, quote, are all repatriated, unquote. The claims also began circulating in more mainstream conservative spaces, notably on social media. A few days after Blood Tribe's Gab post, an X account not affiliated with Blood Tribe that is popular in conservative circles, At End Wokeness, posted a screenshot of a message board post and a picture of a man appearing to hold a goose. The screenshot purports that Haitians had stolen and eaten a neighbor's cat, and the message from the X account adds that, quote, ducks and pets are disappearing, unquote. That post has been viewed 4.9 million times, according to X's public metrics. The man who originally posted the photo said that it was taken in Columbus, Ohio, and that he didn't know the person's ethnicity, as he said he didn't believe the photo should have been used to spread false rumors. Even so, the post sparked a major jump for the rumor. What had been steady conversation that spread in August was beginning to die out early this month, according to data from Peak Metrics, a company that tracks online threats. But the goose post led to a second wave of virality. From there, the rumors snowballed, claims of residents' pets being stolen, animal sacrifice, and voodoo worshipping, as well as discussion about the, quote, great replacement, unquote, conspiracy began to circulate, according to an analysis by Memetica, capital M-E-M-E-T-I-C-A, a digital investigations company. The memes followed. Artificial intelligence-generated images first circulated on 4chan and then in MAGA communities on X of pets and waterfowl being embraced and protected by Trump, which pushed the conspiracy theories even further into the mainstream. At the height of the spread this week, Trump's running mate, Senator J.B. Vance of Ohio, promoted the baseless rumors on his own X account. Quote, it's possible, of course, that all of these rumors will turn out to be false, Vance posted, but he told his followers without proof that the rumors weren't true, they shouldn't, quote, let the crybabies in the media dissuade you, fellow patriots, keep the cat memes flowing, unquote. As the rumors gained steam in conservative online spaces, Blood Tribe was planning real-world actions. On August 10th, about a dozen masked Blood Tribe members carrying banners adorned with swastikas marched in downtown Springfield, labeling the event, quote, an anti-Haitian immigration march, unquote. On Facebook, Mayor Rob Ruse said, quote, there was an attempt to disrupt our community by an outside hate group. Nothing happened except they expressed their First Amendment rights. Blood Tribe's Gab account shot back and invited its followers to harass the mayor. Quote, hello, Springfield, Ohio. We hear you have a real problem of Haitian, quote, refugees, unquote. On August 27th, Drake Berentz, B-E-R-E-N-T-Z, the only Blood Tribe member apart from Polhouse who marches with his face shown, stood before the Springfield City Commission. Identifying himself by his online moniker, Berentz offered a, quote, word of warning, unquote, before his mic was cut off for threatening the commission. He was escorted out by police. Springfield isn't Blood Tribe's first target, and it's not likely to be its last, said Jeff Pischauer, capital P-I-S-C-H-A-U, Pischauser, excuse me, P-I-S-C-H-A-U-S-E-R, a senior researcher for the Southern Poverty Law Center who monitors hate groups. Blood Tribe and other hate groups have used the real world actions for recruitment, attention, and intimidation. Last year, armed Blood Tribe members rallied at drag events in Columbus and Wadsworth, Ohio, chanting Nazi slogans and waving Nazi salutes. They marched at the Pride event in Watertown, Wisconsin, and at the Capitol in Madison, and they shouted, quote, Heil Hitler, unquote, outside Disney World. This year, abandoning LGBTQ issues for immigration, they have protested in Harrisburg, Pennsylvania, Nashville, Tennessee, Pierre, South Dakota, and Springfield. Quote, they aim to stoke fear among local communities that they view as potentially friendly to their ideas, unquote, Pischauser said. Goal number one is psychological trauma, to keep folks out of public life that they disagree with. Number two is to create these viral moments for their group to get attention on Gab and on Telegram, unquote. Blood Tribe, like other white nationalist groups, also seeks to normalize extremist ideas and symbols, Pischauser said. With Trump's and the wider conservative embrace of the Haitians eating pets rumor, Springfield has been a success for the hate groups. Quote, the GOP seems to be falling into their trap, unquote. I would add, they did that decades ago, but we'll talk about the Nazis and then the GOP. Pischauser said, groups like Blood Tribe truly see themselves as pushing the GOP further to their position on policy, but also on rhetoric, unquote. The threat from such a mainstreaming of extremist ideas was on display on Thursday. Blood Tribe has used its Gab account to box Springfield residents and government employees who have spoken up against the recent rumors. City Hall had to close down Thursday after multiple government agencies there got bomb threats. And Christopher Polhouse is someone who I have discussed in the past on these programs. And for the record, 1311, I accessed an article from the Libertarian Institute of August 10th from 2023, American Neo-Nazi Training Forces in Maine to Fight in Ukraine. And this is by Kyle Anzalone, A-N-Z-A-L-O-N-E. Christopher Polhouse, a former Marine and prominent neo-Nazi, has purchased land in Maine to train soldiers to fight for Ukraine. He sees the war against Russia as a unique chance to fight alongside the Azov Battalion and defend a, quote, nearly all-white nation. I'm not going to read the entire article again. This is in, for the record, 1311. It will also be in the written description for this program. And in a post on X, formerly Twitter, Polhouse confirmed he hoped his Blood Tribe would join the Azov Battalion and C-14, Combat 14, prominent Ukrainian neo-Nazi militias in the fight against Russia. Scott Horton, director of the Libertarian Institute, tweeted an article about the land in Maine and asked, quote, they go in a fight with the Azov Battalion and Combat 14 on the Eastern Front, unquote. Polhouse, nicknamed the Hammer, responded directly to Horton saying, yes, actually. And I would note that in full record 1096 and 1097, among others, we have discussed the fact that the Nazis in Ukraine, and we'll talk about that whole lineage, we'll probably go into our next program, they see Ukraine as the fertile soil upon which literally a worldwide National Socialist Revolution will be minted. Mexican metaphor. Another article here from the New York Times, of Western print edition of September 18, 2024. Ohio's governor sends state troopers to help protect students in Springfield, unquote, by Kevin Williams and Miriam Jordan. I'm going to excerpt this. Children across Springfield, Ohio arrived at school Tuesday morning to the site of state troopers deployed by the governor after a wave of bomb scares rattled the community. He said investigators had determined that many of the bomb threats originated outside the U.S. Quote, and that's really worth noting. He said investigators had determined that many of the bomb threats originated outside the United States. Well, I wonder where. Ukraine, perhaps. You know what? I'm wondering if, in fact, this doesn't die, which I suspect it will. What do you want to bet that they try to blame that one on Russia? I mean, here you've got Polhouse's group training to fight with the Azov Battalion. Quote, many of these threats are coming in from overseas, made by those who want to fuel the current discord surrounding Springfield, unquote, Mr. DeWan said in a statement, quote, we cannot let the bad guys win, unquote. Higher education institutions in Springfield also have endured threats and disruptions. The city said on Monday that it would cancel an annual festival called Culture Fest, planned for September 27th and 28th over safety concerns. Later, Mr. Vance said, quote, if I have to create stories, note this is really wild. Later, Mr. Vance said, quote, if I have to create stories so that the American media actually pays attention to the suffering of the American people, then that's what I'm going to do. In other words, she's basically saying, yep, I'm making this up. And doing so absolutely shamelessly. Now, this past week, actually it was last Sunday, we were treated to another would-be assassin of Donald Trump. This is a guy named Ryan Wesley Routh. And he has a very interesting background. I've heard people try to blame him, label him as a Democrat. He apparently fudged some of his ideological affiliations in order to make himself appear to be a Democrat. He is as much of a Democrat with a capital D as Lee Harvey Oswald was a communist. I mean, it's pure BS. But an article in the Gray Zone by Max Blumenthal, who, by the way, his father, Sidney Blumenthal, along with Harvey Yazygin, are the editors of a book, one of the early books that I've used in programs called Government by Gunplay, that I've used in AFA number 8 and also in the miscellaneous archive show about the shooting of George Wallace. This, a would-be Trump assassin recruited for Ukraine's International Legion. Surprise, surprise. Before he was caught with an AK-47 on a golf course near Trump, Ryan Routh went to Kiev to fight for Ukraine's military and recruit for his International Legion. In a book-length manifesto, Routh wished for assassinations of Putin and Trump and urged nuclear war with Russia. Ryan Routh was arrested today with an AK-47-style rifle fitted with a sniper scope several hundred yards from Donald Trump while the former president was golfing. According to the Washington Post, the, quote, Trump golf course incident investigated as potential assassination attempt. And let's scroll down here. Back in 2022, Routh reportedly, that's R-O-U-T-H, reportedly traveled to Ukraine to recruit for the International Legion. According to Newsweek, Romania, which interviewed Routh in 2022, the American resident of Hawaii hoped to fight as a volunteer alongside the Ukrainian army, but was too old at age 56. So plan B, unquote, Routh said, again quoting, was to come to Kiev and to promote the idea of many others coming to join the International Legion. We need thousands of people here to fight alongside Ukrainians. There are about 190 countries on our planet, and if the governments are not officially sending soldiers here, then we civilians should pick up this torch and make it happen. Ralph's timeline is filled with scores of tweets volunteering his direct assistance to the war in Ukraine, cheerleading the war against Russia and attacking opponents of military aid to Kiev, such as Tulsi Gabbard. Well, Tulsi Gabbard is now... I caught the ration of fresh fertilizer. I'm digressing slightly. I've spoken about the Tulsi Gabbard before the record 891. Actually, maybe it's 991. Yeah, 991. And she is a member of the Hare Krishna cult, as is her husband, as are her parents, was her congressional staff. She was the deputy chair of the Democratic National Committee. I suspect that she may have been the one who leaked the information to WikiLeaks, but that is, speculation. I caught a ration of fresh fertilizer from people saying, I mean, you're attacking the cult, Tulsi Gabbard. Well, now she's supporting Donald Trump. And skipping down, Semaphore described Ralph as the head of the International Volunteer Center in Ukraine. He complained to the outlet that Ukraine's government was less than enthusiastic about the droves of volunteers flocking to Kiev. Quote, I have had partners meeting with Ukraine's Ministry of Defense every week and still have not been able to get them to agree to issue a single visa. Ralph also appeared in a March 25th, 2023 New York Times feature about, quote, the U.S. volunteers in Ukraine who lie, waste, and bicker. Among those featured alongside the North Carolina volunteer was Malcolm Nance, a star MSNBC commentator who falsely told audiences he had enlisted for frontline combat against Russian soldiers when, in fact, he spent his time tweeting from a Lvov hotel room. And I'm going to skip down through this. One of the groups that Ralph was networking with, or at least attempting to network with, was the Azov Battalion, which overlaps, it's not coterminous, with the Ukrainian, the International Volunteer Legion. And immediately following this post by Max Blumenthal, he was locked out of his Twitter account. And some interesting questions about what Ryan Wesley Ralph are in an article that appeared in the Naked Capitalism blog of September 16th of 2024. This is by Lambert Strether, capital S-T-R-E-T-H-E-R, of Corrente. Ralph's biography, and it talks about some of the things he was involved with. He had court records show more than 100 criminal counts have been filed against Ryan Ralph in North Carolina, most in Guilford County, which underlies Greensboro. The exact outcome of each case was not immediately clear. Records also show convictions for carrying concealed weapons, possession of stolen property, and hit and run. In those cases, which included misdemeanor convictions for violations such as resisting an officer and driving on a suspended license, the defendant received a suspended sentence and parole or probation. In 2002, court records show he was convicted of possessing a weapon of mass destruction, a machine gun. And skipping down, Ryan Ralph's political support evolved from Trump in 2016 to Gabbard in 2020, then Ramaswamy and Haley in 2024, both Republicans. The salient feature of Ralph's political life recently seems to have been support for Ukraine. Aggregator Ukrainska Pravda summarizes CNN. Ralph has expressed support for Ukraine on social media following Russia's invasion. Anyway, it goes on to talk about this. And in a section called Questions and Loose Ends. Now, bear in mind all of those criminal convictions, including possessing a machine gun, stolen property. Questions and Loose Ends. One, how did Ralph get the gun? I am nothing like an expert in America's admittedly porous gun laws. It does seem to me, however, that a person like Ralph, with multiple criminal counts and several convictions, one for possessing a machine gun, was a less than ideal candidate for a membership in a well-regulated militia. Although, to be fair, that seems to be what he wanted to do in Ukraine, whether he did so or not. So how did Ralph get the gun? Amazon, a gun show, did he find it under a toadstool? Update, the same question goes for the car. Whose was it? His, family, or friends? Two, how did Ralph know Trump would be on the course? From AP, Trump's plans for the golf Sunday were not part of any public schedule. On days he is not campaigning, he can often be found golfing at one of his courses. Trump International Golf Club, West Palm Beach, about a 10-minute drive from his Mar-a-Lago residence, is a favorite. And, again, I scrolled down a little too far. We're going to have to continue this in our next interview, which we will do. So how did Ralph know to find Trump at that time and place? It makes no sense that he set himself up with the weaponry, the ceramics, and a GoPro on the off chance that Trump might appear in his sights. Three, how did Ralph plan the assassination from out of state? Ralph grew up in North Carolina, lived in Hawaii, and then, to guess at his itinerary, which we don't know either, flew to Miami to assassinate Trump. Not cheap, and not something to do on a whim. from the Daily Mail. Politico's Neil Caputo says that what's bedeviled both observers and authorities is how Ralph, who moved from North Carolina to Hawaii in the 2010s, was able to plot this from out of state. The question no one's been able to answer yet, and hopefully will be answered, quote, the alleged assassin appeared to have been from out of state. How did he drive down there? How did he case the joint? How did he know when the former president would come there and would come within his potential line of sight? For what it's worth, Skedmit, unquote. For what it's worth, at least one International Legion spokesperson, King Jack Strong, I love the moniker, disowned Ralph as of June 21st of this year. And skipping down. In the interview, of course, Strong would disavow Ralph, but in June. Then again, here is Ralph being interviewed by the Times in 2023. In the interview, Mr. Ralph said he was in Washington to meet with the U.S. Commission on Security and Cooperation in Europe, known as the Helsinki Commission, quote, for 2 hours, unquote, to help push for more support for Ukraine. The commission is led by members of Congress and staffed by congressional aides. It is influential on matters of democracy and security and has been vocal in supporting Ukraine. The Helsinki Commission had Paul Massaro on its staff, and here is, and then there's a picture of Massaro with an Azov battalion flag. 4, how spook adjacent was Ralph? And he quotes Ed Snowden here. Ralph should already have been on somebody's list for the machine gun conviction. It's very hard for me to believe that Ralph could have run around Ukraine raising money, talking to the Times, Semaphore, and Newsweek Romania, attempting to recruit foreign fighters, and ingratiating himself with various, quote, volunteer organizations, unquote, without getting on some sort of spooks list, since Ukraine is, after all, crawling with spooks. So Snowden's careful placing of the burden of proof zero contact is appropriate, and I don't think our organs of state security will be able to meet it. I have seen 2 sighting shots for Ruth's handler, if any. One is for Sue Kim, late of the CIA, capital S-O-O, less M, capital K-I-M, late of the CIA, now of RAND, but the screenshot purporting to link them does not show Ralph's account. The second is for Malcolm Nance, which would make me happy, but the nexus seems to be that they were both quoted in the same New York Times story. And there is abundant information about Ralph and the Azov Battalion, which overlaps the International Legion. We'll talk more about this and the fact that this apparently Nazi-generated meme about Haitians stealing dogs and cats has now migrated to the presidential debate and is being bruited about by both the Republican presidential candidate and the Republican vice presidential candidate. But we will do that in our next program. I apologize, Monty, for reading so long here.
No, not at all.
We'll get into some of this in our next discussion. By the way, I want to note that not only before the record 1311, but all of my entire life's work, including the conversations with Monty, and this is number 21, will be on a new 64-gigabyte flash drive, along with a mini library of old anti-fascist books, which I'll talk about in our next program. And that will be available for a nominal fee. It won't be ready till later this year, but do note for those people who want to get a hold of the work that I've done and who found the interviews with Monty very absorbing, but also very dense, that would be a great way of owning the interviews for yourself. And again, I get no money whatsoever from this, nor does Monty. So, this is really interesting, Monty, to see how the Azov Battalion people are cropping up in one capacity or another in the presidential campaign. And I suspect, this is an opinion, but I suspect that these attempts on Trump's life will actually motivate his followers and will increase his popularity. But that is rumination. This concludes For the Record program number 1347, Conversations with Monty. This is conversation number 21. This is being recorded on September 22nd of the year 2024. For Monty, this is Dave Emery saying thanks for listening.